You know, I want you to just take a second and imagine you're watching a live sports broadcast. So say the bases are loaded, the tension is just absolutely peaking, and the exact millisecond the pitcher releases the baseball, a highly detailed stat box pops up on your screen.
Right, detailing like the rotation, speed, the trajectory.
Exactly, all of that. Or, well, picture an entirely different scenario. You were a surgeon, right, in the middle of this incredibly complex operation, and you're wearing an augmented reality headset.
Oh, wow. Okay. High stakes.
Very high stakes. And as your hands move, this headset provides real-time, step-by-step visual guidance, just, highlighting exactly what to do next without even a fraction of a moment of lag.
Yeah, and in both of those incredibly high-stakes cases, there is an AI operating in the background, just constantly making instant decisions about what is happening on the screen right in front of it.
Exactly. But I mean, for that AI to actually be useful, for it to not totally throw off the surgeon or, ruin the live sports broadcast, it has to know precisely when a specific action starts and stops.
Yes, and it has to do that without any benefit of hindsight, which is the real kicker.
Right, because it has absolutely no idea what is going to happen in the very next frame of the video.
None at all.
So how does an AI know a pitcher has, officially finished the throwing motion if it literally can't see the ball cross the plate yet? How does it know an action is over without being able to see into the future?
Well, it is a massive, massive technical challenge. To pull that off, we are essentially asking an AI to localize an action temporally on the fly with zero future context.
Which sounds impossible.
It's definitely tough, but that exact puzzle is what researchers at ECCV 2026 decided to tackle, and they do it with a new framework called OnPoint.
Okay, let's unpack this, because the way they actually solve this, it kind of flips everything we know about training AI right on its head.
It really does, yeah.
It introduces this brand new challenge they're calling POTHOL. That's Point Supervised Online Temporal Action Localization.
A bit of a mouthful, but yes, PODOL.
Yeah, quite the acronym. But to really get why this is such a huge deal for our deep dive today, we need to draw a hard line right up front between, offline video analysis and online video analysis.
Absolutely, because that distinction, it's really the foundation of everything we're talking about today.
Because, well, offline analysis is what most of us are already pretty used to.
Yeah.
That's when the AI gets to just look at an entire video file, start to finish, sort of like you watching a movie on a DVR.
Right. It can rewind, it can fast forward.
Exactly. You can just skip to the ending of the video to figure out what was happening at the very beginning.
Precisely. It has all the context in the world. So if it's trying to figure out when a baseball pitch started, it can just scrub to the end of the play and, work backward from there.
But online analysis, which is the whole focus of this OnPoint paper,
Yeah.
that is like processing a live stream frame by frame.
Yes. The AI is flying totally blind.
It only knows what has happened up to this exact current millisecond. It has zero future context. And that makes training these models a completely different, just much wilder beast.
It does. And to really grasp the elegance of the solution they came up with, we first kind of have to look at the data bottleneck that's been holding the whole industry back.
Right, the data issue.
Yeah, like why is it so incredibly hard to train these live online AI models in the first place? And it really comes down to the grueling, just punishing process of annotation.
Right, the actual manual human labor of teaching the AI what it's supposed to even be looking for in the training data.
Historically, if you wanted to train an AI to recognize, say, a baseball pitch or a surgical incision, human annotators had to physically sit down with thousands of hours of video and create what are called dense segment annotations.
Dense segment annotations.
And
Meaning what exactly?
meaning they had to manually scrub through the footage, frame by incredibly slow frame, to tag the exact starting millisecond of the pitcher's windup, and then, keep scrubbing to tag the exact ending millisecond of the follow-through.
Oh man, that sounds just excruciatingly tedious.
It's terrible.
Just sitting there, hitting the right arrow key over and over, looking for the exact pixel where a foot lifts off the mound. I mean, I have to imagine it's incredibly expensive to pay humans to do that at any kind of scale.
Oh, it scales terribly. The time and money required are just astronomical. So the alternative the industry has slowly moved toward is something called point supervision.
Point supervision, okay.
Yeah. So instead of finding those perfect, precise, rigid boundaries, a human annotator just watches the video in real time and drops a single pin, just one timestamp somewhere during the action.
Just one click.
Just one click. They click their mouse once while the pitch is happening. And studies, including the ones referenced in our sources for this deep dive, they show this point supervision method is up to 6 times faster than full segment annotation.
6 times faster. Okay, that is a massive cost saving right there. And there's actually a fascinating little psychological quirk here too, right?
Oh, the Gaussian thing, yes.
Yeah. The paper notes that when you tell a human to just drop a single pin during an action, they naturally tend to drop it in a Gaussian distribution right near the very center of the action.
Right. We unconsciously find the absolute peak of the movement to click our mouse.
It's so interesting. So human intuition provides this highly reliable, albeit very sparse, signal right at the core of the action. You know, you don't get the outer edges, but you get a very strong heartbeat.
Exactly.
But hang on. I actually have to push back a little here.
Okay, go for it.
Why are we even using human intuition for this anymore? I mean, if you've been following the tech world at all lately, you know, we live in the era of these giant, omnipotent foundation models.
Right, the LLMs.
Yeah, wait, like Gemini 2.5 Flash, you can practically write a novel in 2 seconds. It can process hours of video. It can parse complex logic. So why on earth are we still paying humans to click a mouse during a baseball game? Can't we just feed the raw video to Gemini and ask it to find the start and end times for us?
It is a completely logical question. And honestly, it's the very first thing many tech companies try to do these days.
I bet.
And the researchers actually tested exactly that scenario. They took Gemini 2.5 Flash, which is, you know, a state-of-the-art multimodal foundation model, and they asked it to annotate the Thomos 14 sports data set to see if it could just replace the human clickers entirely.
How'd you do
that? And the results were, well, abysmal.
Oh, really? How bad is abysmal?
Gemini completely failed at defining precise temporal boundaries. When evaluated for accuracy, they use a metric called mean average precision, or MEPI. Gemini scored a dismal 29.2%.
29.2%.
Yeah, it constantly merged separate, totally distinct actions together, or it placed the start and stop boundaries in completely the wrong spots.
Wow, 29.2% is practically guessing.
Yeah.
But why? If it's so smart linguistically and spatially, why does it fail so hard at time?
It really comes down to architectural differences. Giant foundation models like Gemini are trained heavily on semantic meaning. They process a video and say, ah, I see a man, a ball, a field, this is baseball, they understand the what. But precise temporal boundary understanding requires tracking these micro fluctuations in pixel movement from 1 millisecond to the exact next.
Right, it's about the when, not the what.
Exactly. And LLMs just aren't inherently designed for that continuous, low-level temporal precision. But when the researchers use specialized, lightweight models trained just on those single human point labels, those drop pins we talked about, the score skyrocketed from 29.2% to 90.3%.
90.3%. That is a staggering difference.
It really is.
I mean, if you're listening to this and you've ever assumed that giant foundation models are going to automatically replace every single specialized tool out there, this metric should definitely give you pause.
Yeah.
A generalist AI, no matter how massive, just doesn't have the temporal precision of a specialized tool guided by a single point of human intuition.
It doesn't. But this actually brings us to the core dilemma of the whole paper. We have these cheap, efficient, incredibly useful human point labels. The problem is that point labels historically only work for offline models.
Ah, right. Let me guess. Is that because an offline model has the luxury of scrubbing backward and forward?
Yep.
Like, if it sees a pin dropped at minute 2 of a video, it can kind of cheat and look at minute 3 or minute 1 to figure out where the actual start and stop edges of that specific action are.
That is exactly why. The offline model uses the future context to just fill in the blanks left by the single point. But an online model, the one running live on the surgeon's headset, for example, it can't look forward.
Right, it's stuck in the present.
If it sees a pin drop right now, it has no idea if the action continues for another half second or another 10 whole seconds. So the ultimate question the researchers had to answer is, how do we train a live online model using sparse data that was designed entirely for an offline model?
And that is where the OnPoint framework steps in. It introduces this really cool concept called offline to online distillation.
Yes. And distillation, in this context, it means transferring knowledge from a large, fully informed model into a smaller, heavily constrained model.
Okay.
The researchers start by training an offline teacher model. this teacher is given the whole video from start to finish, along with those single human point annotations.
So it sees everything.
Everything. Because it has all the past and future context, it successfully figures out the real boundaries of the actions and gets very, very accurate.
Okay, so the teacher has essentially mastered the material. Then what happens?
Then they freeze the teacher, its training is completely done, its weights are locked in, and now they introduce the online student model.
The apprentice.
Right. And the student is strictly online. It only ever sees a sliding window of past frames and the exact current frame it's on. It is completely blind to the future. So the researchers then use the frozen teacher to train this blind student.
Okay, so what does this all mean conceptually? It's basically like the teacher took an open book test, right, saw all the answers, read the whole chapter, and then wrote this highly detailed study guide.
I like that analogy, yeah.
And the student has to use that study guide to take a pop quiz in real time, where they absolutely cannot turn the page to see what happens next.
That's spot on. And what's fascinating here is that while offline to online distillation has been used in other fields like language modeling or spatial action detection, this is actually the very first time it has been successfully applied to point-supervised temporal action localization.
Really? The very first time?
Yep. They are teaching a live streaming AI using only the condensed wisdom of an offline AI, which itself was trained on nothing but single mouse clicks.
But wait, if the student is totally blind to the future, just handing it the teacher's final boundary answer doesn't actually help it anticipate when a boundary is coming in a live stream.
No, it doesn't.
I mean, it's like telling a blindfolded driver where the stop sign was after they already passed it.
Yeah.
How do you train anticipation? How does the teacher transfer that kind of dynamic knowledge?
Well, it's a multi-layered process. The paper outlines this distillation framework to give the student exactly what it needs, starting with the broadest strokes and moving to the most complex.
Okay, lay it out for me.
First, the teacher generates what are called instance-level pseudo-labels.
Pseudo-labels?
Yeah, it basically draws a rough box and says to the student, look, based on my open book knowledge, the pitch started roughly here and ended roughly here. It hands these segments to the student to practice on, so the student just learns the basic structure of an action proposal.
Okay, so giving it the rough edges makes total sense for the broad strokes. But video is this continuous stream of time. How does the student learn the actual rhythm of the action inside those boundaries?
That part is handled by something called class activation subsequence distillation, or KARAS.
KARAS, okay.
And this is about dense frame-by-frame guidance. The teacher provides a continuous score for every single frame, indicating how strongly that specific frame represents the action. The student then tries to mimic this exact frame-by-frame temporal shape.
Does the paper actually detail how they measure if the student is mimicking it correctly? Like, what's the math there?
They do, yeah. They use something called mean squared error loss.
Mean squared error.
Basically, instead of just punishing the AI for being generally wrong about the overall shape of the action, this specific math punishes the AI proportionally for every tiny fraction of a mistake it makes on the intensity of the action, frame by frame.
Oh, I see.
It forces the AI to perfectly trace the exact volume knob of the action as it gets louder and softer, so to speak.
I love that. It's tracing the volume knob of the movement.
Right.
But I mean, even if it has the rhythm down perfectly, that still doesn't solve the blind to the future problem we just talked about.
No, it doesn't.
We still haven't really explained how it learns to stop at the stop sign before actually hitting it.
You're right. And that brings us to the real secret sauce of the on-point framework, which is anticipatory window level distillation.
Ooh, anticipation. Tell me exactly how that works.
So the teacher actually forces the student to predict what actions are going to happen in the next 16 frames.
The next 16 frames, which is what? Just a fraction of a second?
Exactly. A tiny slice of time. But the teacher, having seen the whole video, already knows what happens in those 16 frames. So it essentially covers up the next 16 frames and scores the student on its ability to guess the immediate future based solely on the present window of frames it can currently see.
Wow. So it is just constantly being tested on what is about to happen.
Yeah.
Over and over again, thousands of times.
Exactly. And if we connect this to the bigger picture, this anticipation training artificially compensates for the streaming constraint we talked about earlier.
Right.
By constantly practicing predicting the next 16 frames, the online model develops a kind of spidey sense.
The spidey sense. I like that.
Yeah, it learns the subtle, almost imperceptible visual cues that an action is about to end or a new one is about to begin. And this allows it to drop a boundary marker at the perfect millisecond without actually seeing the next frame. It is essentially learning intuition through sheer repetition.
Okay, the spidey sense is amazing. It's really learning to read the tea leaves of the current frame. But, well, here's where my skepticism kicks in again.
Let's hear it.
This entire very elegant framework relies entirely on the student learning from the teacher's pseudo-labels, right?
Yes, that is the core mechanism.
But the teacher isn't infallible. I mean, it generated those labels based on a single point dropped by a human who was, you know, probably drinking a coffee and maybe clicked half a second too late.
Very likely, yes.
So the teacher's notes definitely have some inherent errors or noise in them. If the teacher is occasionally guessing the boundaries wrong, doesn't the student just internalize all of the teacher's bad habits? It sounds a bit like the blind leading the blind.
It is a highly critical vulnerability. If the teacher's data drifts, the student will just confidently learn the wrong thing. But the researchers absolutely anticipated this. To prevent the student from blindly internalizing the teacher's mistakes, they introduced a mechanism called anchor-level point supervision.
Anchor-level, meaning they tie it down to something completely objective.
Exactly. They take the original raw human point labels, those single pins dropped by the annotators in the very beginning, which represent the absolute peak of the action, and they feed them directly to the student as an auxiliary training signal.
Oh, so the student isn't just relying entirely on the teacher's interpretation of things. It gets a direct peek at the original human data.
Right. It acts as an anchor to reality. And the researchers actually stress tested this in the paper. They purposely injected heavy noise into the teacher's data just to see if the student would break under bad instruction.
And did it?
No. Because the student could continuously cross-reference the teacher's noisy boundaries with the undeniable rock-solid human point data, the student stayed remarkably robust.
That's incredible.
It learned to trust the teacher for the shape of the action, but it trusted the human for the core location.
That is just such a clever failsafe. It keeps the model entirely grounded in human reality.
It does. And they paired this failsafe with one more innovation to keep the model fiercely focused on what matters. It's called an Actionist Calibrated Anchor Decoder.
Actionist Calibrated Anchor Decoder. Okay, how does that one work?
Well, it's essentially a way of filtering out the chaos of the background. In a live video stream, you know, most of what you're seeing isn't the action you actually care about.
Right.
It's players standing around adjusting their gloves. It's the crowd in the background. It's the grass on the field.
So how does the decoder fix that? Is it sort of like putting noise-canceling headphones on the AI so it only hears the crack of the bat?
It's not just putting noise-canceling headphones on. It's actually more like a smart microphone, one that actively dials down the volume on the static, the crowd, the grass, while simultaneously cranking up the gain the exact millisecond it detects the specific frequency of a bat cracking.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it artificially widens the contrast between action and background.
Uh-huh.
And this specific calibration mechanism boosted the model's focus on relevant action frames by a relative 19%.
19% is massive when you're talking about microsecond accuracy. It's just actively ignoring the useless pixels. So let's just step back and look at what we have here. We've built this incredibly complex, robust student model. It has a trained spidey sense for the future, it cross-references its teacher's study guide with actual human reality, and it uses a smart microphone to ignore all the background noise.
That sums it up perfectly.
The million-dollar question, though, does it actually work when you deploy it out in the wild on messy, real, live video?
The proof is absolutely in the results. And the team didn't just test this in one narrow, pristine scenario. They deployed the on-point model across 5 highly diverse data sets.
Oh, really? Like what?
Well, they used Thumos 14, which is high-speed sports, EGTA and Epic Kitchens 100, which are these chaotic, egocentric videos of people cooking and using tools from a first-person perspective.
Oh, first-person. That's shaky camera work, usually.
Very shaky. Then there's HOI 4D Office, which maps human-object interaction in a mundane office setting, and Fine Action, which features very complex, temporally overlapping actions.
So it's definitely not just a one-trick pony that only understands baseball. It can process someone chopping an onion in their kitchen or grabbing a stapler off a desk.
Exactly. And across the board, on every single data set, it consistently outperformed all the existing baselines, achieving up to a 7% increase in mean average precision.
7% is a massive leap forward in temporal localization. Did the paper give any like visual examples of what that improvement actually looks like for the end user?
They did, and they are quite striking when you see them graphed out. So in one example of a baseball pitch video, the baseline models caught the action, but the boundaries were incredibly sloppy.
Sloppy out.
Well, they'd include seconds of the pitcher just standing there doing nothing before the windup. The on-point model, however, drew much tighter, more complete temporal boundaries that perfectly encapsulated the pitch from the exact start of the windup to the very end of the follow-through.
Ah, so it really trimmed the fat.
Precisely. But an even better example was this throw discus video. The athlete throws the discus, which is obviously the primary action, but there was this subtle secondary action instance of the athlete doing a practice swing beforehand.
Oh, a practice swing. That's tricky.
Very. The baseline model completely missed the practice swing. It just flew right past it because it wasn't pronounced enough. But on point, thanks to that dense frame-by-frame rhythm training and the anticipation, caught the subtle secondary action perfectly.
Because it was tracing the volume knob. It heard the quieter action.
Exactly.
That is brilliant. But okay, here is my final logistical question. How demanding is this model? Because it sounds incredibly computationally heavy, having all these different anticipation heads and smart microphone decoders running at once. If I actually need this for an AR headset in a surgery room or a live broadcast on my TV, it can't require a supercomputer strapped to my back?
That might actually be the most impressive part of the entire paper. Because all the heavy computational lifting was done offline by the teacher during the training phase, the online student running live is blazingly fast.
Hey, how fast?
It runs at 312 frames per second.
Wait, 312? Real-time streaming video is usually, what, 30 or 60 frames per second?
Exactly. It operates at a fraction of a millisecond per frame. It processes the video far faster than the video actually plays, and it achieves this using only 93 million parameters.
Wow.
To put that technical spec in perspective, it vastly outperforms heavier memory-augmented models in the field right now, like HAT and MATR, which require significantly more computational power and memory overhead.
So bringing this right back to you, listening to this, why should you even care about parameter counts in 312 frames per second? Because this means this technology isn't just some theoretical lab experiment that only works on a $10 million server.
No, not at all.
It is lightweight, it is highly accurate, and it is incredibly fast. This is the exact underlying math that will power live sports analytics on your everyday tablet or those real-time AR tutorials guiding you through fixing your sink at home. It is ready for the real world right now.
It really is a paradigm shift for the field. I mean, we have journeyed from the incredibly costly bottleneck of dense video labeling through the highly revealing failure of giant LLMs to solve the temporal boundary problem to arrive at this incredibly elegant solution.
The on-point framework. Taking an offline model that can see the whole timeline and having it distill its knowledge to teach a live streaming AI how to accurately predict and box live actions in literal milliseconds.
And doing it all with nothing more than a single point of human supervision. It's a masterclass in making AI both efficient in training and incredibly effective in deployment.
You know, digesting all of this leaves me with a really provocative final thought.
Oh, let's hear it.
If we can successfully build an artificial intelligence that distills the future context of an offline model into the present instincts of a live streaming model, I wonder how much that actually applies to our own human learning.
That raises a really profound question. You mean the idea of transferring our own offline knowledge into live performance?
Exactly. Think about a first responder entering a chaotic emergency scene or a professional athlete in the middle of a complex play.
Oh, right.
They can't see the future either. They are operating online. But maybe by deeply studying past patterns offline, you know, watching game tape, doing slow motion drills, reviewing case studies, we're essentially distilling that future context into our own nervous system.
Building the muscle memory.
Exactly. We are training our brains to develop that exact same spidey sense to anticipate the future in the chaos of the present. Can we train ourselves to be better online students of our own offline teachers?
It's a fascinating parallel to draw. The mechanics of intuition, whether artificial or biological, they always seem to rely on unlocking the hidden structures of the past to predict the immediate future.
So the next time you're watching that live broadcast and you see that stat box pop up the very millisecond the ball leaves the pitcher's hand, you will know exactly what kind of invisible, anticipatory math is making it happen. Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive into the on-point framework. Keep learning, keep pushing your boundaries, and as always, stay insanely curious. We'll catch you next time.